That's right. Got to give the people. Have got to give the people what they want. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark. And as well, I like to say, you are at the right place at the right time. Here at Progressive News Weekly, we week in and week out bring you news and information that's been, well, gathered, I like to say, culled from around the world. Primarily here in the continental United States, however, though we have had guests from time to time from overseas or in the Caribbean that have joined us. Today, very, very special programming. In case you are not on our mail list, today is a prime example of why you will want to be on our mail list. To get on our mail list, you'll simply send me an email to Darryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, _ CLA18 at MSN.com. And you will, prior to the program, sometimes as soon as maybe an hour before, but I always try to get the announcements out a week or at least 3 or 4 days before the program, so that you'll know and be privy to who our guest will be for that week. Most weeks we do have a guest that will be speaking to a specific topic. And by the way, please continue to send your suggestions to me, because most of our programs come from you, the listener, or at least the topic, if not the guest as well. And that's why we like to say this is news for you, by you, and of you. Similar to our Constitution, which, from my perspective, doesn't always hold true. Today, a couple of treats for you. We do have a guest. We do have a topic. But as a special treat, and I do mean a special treat, in addition to yours truly, moi, Daryl Clark, I'm honored to have a special guest co-host. For those of you who have been listening to Progressive News Weekly over the years, you're familiar with this co-host, the one and only Dr. Akhil Khalfani. Yes, that's right. We have Dr. Akhil Khalfani, who will be joining us as a co-host, sort of as just a little treat. So you never know what you're going to get when you tune in to Progressive News Weekly. And we do appreciate you for tuning in and week out and sharing, as our numbers are exploding over the last year or so. And with that, I'm going to bring in our special co-host guest, and then we're going to talk about who our guest and what the topic is for this evening. As the program alludes to, well, let me put it this way. Not as the program alludes to, as our opening tune alludes to, got to give the people what they want. That's what we're talking about here. That's exactly what we're talking about here. And so, we know so much is going on in our society with regard to recent killings of our black youth. I decided that we want to make that a topic. And so today, our guest is going to speak to that, and he has some relevant background, in fact, with regard to that. So, with that said, let me bring on our special co-host guest first and foremost. And so Dr. Akhil Khalfani is the director of the Africana Institute at Essex County College, and he's always so very active and so very involved in so many activities, local activities, and the like. And so we're going to have him speak to some of that, and I'm getting some information from our engineer here as I'm speaking, making sure that our guest is with us. I believe he is, yes, okay. So we're ready to, as they say, rock and roll. And so let's do this. Okay. Dr. Kilfany, welcome to Progressive News Weekly.
Hey, thank you very much. How are you doing, brother?
Oh, we're doing. Keeping it moving, keeping it grooving, trying to keep it real, keep it live all the time. And, you know, we like to believe that this program, and you've been on many times, it enlightens. It encourages, it empowers, but as important as anything, it instills individuals to get involved and make a difference. And I really meant that when I said I'm honored to have you on the program today, because, you know, I've seen your body of work on numerous occasions, and that's really what you're about. And I'm not trying to patronize you. You know me well enough, Dr. Kilfany. It's just the truth of the matter of the fact. In fact, I know you've got, I've seen emails coming across my desk, some of the things you're involved in. Before we get into our interview, by the way, we're going to be interviewing Mr. Kevin Porter. Mr. Kevin Porter is truly another man that walks the talk. And he's an author, he's an engineer, executive director of Man-Made Mentoring, he's an educator. But we're going to get into this conversation with Mr. Kevin Porter in just a moment. But I want to just speak to some of what Dr. Kilfany is doing right now. So share with us some of the activities that you've got going on here in the tri-state area, New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey area.
Okay, okay. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on the show, and that I'm honored to be on the show as a co-host this time around with you. So I'm glad to, you know, participate in a different form and fashion.
Okay.
there's a lot of stuff coming up, not just stuff that I'm organizing and doing, but things in the community. Most immediately, there's a couple of things that I'm involved in. One is next week we're going to have, I'm on the Human Relations Commission in West Orange, and we're hosting a panel discussion and a small forum, mostly with the students and members of the commission, but it's also open in that there's a students at West Orange High School who have an organization called the Unity Club, and we're working with them to talk about police brutality, talk about interactions with the police and how to foster positive relationships in the face of some of the things that are in the news right now. So we're going to talk about all those things and try to address the ways in which they, you know, how they emerge and how do we kind of handle some of that stuff. So that's next week, Tuesday at 7 p.m. at West Orange High School. And then we're going to have this weekend, though, right here in the area, first and foremost, starting this weekend in Brooklyn, is the 38th Annual Dance Africa, and that's at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. But there's, you know, there's lots of stuff that goes on the streets in the community. There's a huge street vendor fair and activities that go on for and with the community that will happen this weekend and next weekend. And then that's followed up. This weekend also in Weekway Park in Newark, you have the celebration of the life of Malcolm X, and that's going to be Weekway Park from 12 to 6:30 p.m. And then you have the annual caravan to Malcolm X's and Bae Shabazz's grave. There's a pilgrimage there because of the 50th anniversary caravan, but this is Malcolm X's birthday is on the 19th, so there Tuesday folks are going to be traveling out to from Harlem to New York. I mean, up to upstate New York to Malcolm X's gravesite, and so and all the people who are buried there, a lot of other important figures who are buried at the same place, be a great time to pay tribute to them. The Newark is going to have the African American Heritage Festival is on the 23rd and the 24th. So Memorial Day weekend, that's going to be in Weekway Park again. At the college on the 6th, well, let me go back to the 30th, is our event. We're going to have the our third Pan-African Drum Fest, and that's at, and we're going to do a tribute to the life of Dr. Ben. And that's Saturday, May the 30th, at, from 1 to 5 p.m. There's going to be free food until it runs out. we're going to be having a drum circle, so we encourage the community to bring out your drums and drum. We're going to have professional drummers, but there's also going to be, we're giving away a free djembe. So it's going to be a fabulous time, and I encourage folks to come out here, Dr. Rosalind Jeffries and the African Student Association. There's going to be a Gungun masquerade. The Wadi African Dance Group is going to perform. Igun Mode is going to perform. Shep Hetep, the ancestral music from New York, is going to perform. So there's going to be lots and lots of festivities, and people can find out some more information about that at 973-877-3219. But that's at Essex County College in Newark, New Jersey, on Saturday, March 30th, from 10 to 6 will be when we have vending, and then the event is going to start at 1 o'clock. So there's a bunch more, and I don't know if you want me to run through the rest of it. There's still a lot of other events going on around town. And, you know, we have time to announce some of the other ones at a later date. So I don't want to take up too much time announcing all of them.
My brother, you got it going. Quite a few things going on. Fortunately, before the end of the month, we're hoping, as you and I were discussing earlier, that you'll be coming back and doing a full segment yourself with regard to a lot of what's happening in our communities and Baltimore and Cleveland and New York, and we can go on and on, South Carolina. You know, so much that, you know, is happening in the streets, which is, you know, an excellent segue to our special guest that we have. And, man, Dr. Cafani, I really appreciate you taking the time out as you did today, because I know you're a busy man to co-host, but I couldn't think of anyone else that I would ask to co-host. And maybe we can, if, you know, I'm sure it's going to be a fun time. Maybe we can make this kind of a regular thing. I'm looking forward to this. Let's bring on this special, special brother, Dr. Well, I'm already having him as a doctor. I know he's done quite a bit of educating. But Mr. Kevin Porter is an educator himself. He has he's written a book, Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect, and Mentoring African American Males, is the title of the book. Again, it's titled Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect, Mentoring African American Males. He is an engineer, is an author, of course, and he's an educator, and he's very much a community activist. Welcoming to the airwaves, Mr. Kevin Porter. Mr. Porter, welcome back to Progressive News. Say hello to Dr. Akhil Cavani.
Oh, hello, Dr. Cavani. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, brother. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Brother Clark, for having me on again, and thank you, listeners, for allowing me to share some thoughts and some action today.
Well, you know, the last time you were on, it's been several months. I think it was even towards the beginning of the year, African American History Month, if I'm not mistaken, and it was met with very, very strong reviews. A number of folks had gotten back to me. Who was that brother? He had so much good things to say. So now you come back in the wake of your book, Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect, and Mentoring African American Males. And as you know, probably go ahead.
I was just saying that, yeah, no, that's the title thing. So I think I'm looking forward to hearing more about the insights and the really the motivation behind the book is.
Brother Clark, repeat that again. You kind of broke up.
Breaking up. We're breaking up a little bit. Dr. Kilfani. I'm not sure
okay.
if it's on Dr. Kilfani's end. See if we can tweak the levels a little bit. Okay, so Dr. Kilfani,
can you hear me
would
now?
You repeat the question?
Yeah, no, I wasn't really a question. I was just saying that's a sounds like a great title, and I look forward to hearing what was the motivation behind naming the book and the topic itself.
Okay,
let's go for it. So
all right.
Mr. Porter?
Yes, sir.
What was the motivation for that? And before let me back up one step. We're gonna let's bridge into that question because we got a good 45 minutes here. You're a community activist, and I remember a lot of that coming out back in February when you were here last. You've been involved in mentoring and the like. What led you not to the book? But what led you to be one of a community activist type of an individual? And we have so many on the air with different reasons. What was your motivation, and how long have you been active in the community?
Let's go back to how long I've been active. It's been over 30 years. In 1984, that's when I really got my first touch of making an impact in a child's life. I was about 19, 20 years old and joined in a fraternity, and they wanted us to do some community service. I'd always been an individual that I didn't mind doing for others, but I was thinking more about myself. And when I realized that kids really look up to you despite the fact you may think you have nothing to offer, that you have more than you believe. And what that did was that set me on fire. And through the years, I grew, I developed, I started working more and more with kids and start to realize that there's not a lot of people doing it. There's not a lot of people sacrificing to really trying to develop our young men. Our young men are just like any other males. They learn by what they see. They learn by what they hear. They learn by the actions of others. And if you don't positive things and cause them to do positive activities, they're going to learn the negative things out in the world. I also realize that it's important for us to develop our young African-American males, because at some point in time, they will be leaders. And if they have not been taught, they can't lead. You can't lead in the back of the room. You got to be a leader in the front of the room. So I made it a point to try to develop leaders. But during my time in dealing with at-risk males, there's also a challenge, and the challenge is to try to either convert or code-switch the hyper-masculinity that they need to protect themselves in their communities, which is often poor, crime-ridden, lack of resources, lack of good male models, so they have to show a more bravado that they can do it on their own, that they are men. So ultimately, you have to convert that to a more disciplined, more civilized, more erect, more intelligent manner. And a lot of our kids, our young males, don't have the opportunity to see what that looks like. So I felt a need to try to, wherever I laid my homestead, I tried to reach out in the community and develop young men with that in mind.
You know, that's really interesting. As a well, a community activist myself, and I'd love for Dr. Kofani to weigh in on this as also a community leader and activist. When I got involved, I wasn't thinking so strategically. I was just thinking, I want to help. Because if it wasn't for a coach that took me in as a, 15, 14-year-old, well, actually a little younger than that, I was playing municipal city league sports, and I just happened to be on my bike and riding by a football field, and one of the coaches just said, hey, can you play, can you catch? And I'm like, of course, I'm the best out there. And from there, it's history. And then I, after graduating from schools, decided I wanted to teach others. But it sounds like your approach was you saw a need in terms of developing our black males for our future, for something very specific. Now, I evolved into that mindset, but it sounds like you came right off the cuff with that mindset that, hey, this is our future here. Now, I came out a little bit earlier, and so there was a little difference in time frame there, so many years, maybe 15 years. It's interesting that you came in with a strategic approach. What do you say, Dr. Kofani?
I think that's significant. And when I look at my own kind of experience, I would say my timeline is similar to his, that we have, that kind of awakening moment. And I think that's one of the things that we need to get young folks, young men, to awaken to. And thinking about that as we look at what it means for them to be men, I think that the mentoring piece is important for them to understand that you don't just become a man, that you could be an older person, and that doesn't make you a man, it just makes you older. But you have to understand the responsibilities, and I think mentoring a lot of times is a great way to think about how do we get young boys to understand that responsibility. And that, just getting into a place of ourselves reflecting upon how we made a transition is that those are great stories for young boys. And I think that if they see more stories, that may give them places to reflect upon, to develop into something that they can have as something that they would reflect upon. And I think that's great. That's positive. I would ask you, Brother Porter, if you look at your own story and try to identify with the young men today who have kind of a different reality, what would you say is the main thing, that lesson that you learned that might be akin to some lesson that they could look at to learn? And then the opposite side of that is, what do you think that we need to do differently based on your writing and your experience and looking at today's boys? What do we need to do differently so that we can actually approach them, reach them?
Right. Well, the one thing that I try to, if I try to look at my life and see something I've gained from it, I know our young men are very competitive. I know they're competitive in sports and they're competitive in among each other. And one thing they try to downplay is competition in the classroom. And one thing that I did for myself personally is I knew I wasn't going to be the best athlete. And I knew I probably wasn't going to have the best clothes. But I wanted to compete in the classroom to set me apart. And it started early, where you realize that you can get recognition in the classroom as well. It's frowned upon, and it might be low on the totem pole as far as your edge in your community, but it's something that I think everybody wants to be able to say that they're doing well in school. Everybody wants to say that at some point in time in their life they're going to be successful. successful. But somehow you have to make that a reality by your actions. And I learned early on is that my actions in the classroom spoke for themselves, and people start to realize that that is important. And our young men, their actions on the ball field or the basketball court or the football field, they see the results of working hard. They see the results of the acclaim they receive from doing well and being a star, and they want that reward. However, only so many young men can fulfill that need. Whereas if we can get our young men to be champions in the classroom, and there's enough to go around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're competing to see who's going to be drafted number one. If you are a student, you're a student. So I realized early that I want to put my success in something that I can really deal with. It didn't require money. It didn't require shoes. It didn't require clothes. It requires effort, effort in the classroom. And I think that's the one thing that transcends time, effort, how hard you work in the classroom. One of the experiences I had in high school was my high school was 100% African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this, I don't know what you call it, but it's like go to another school. And the school we went to was a predominantly white school. There was a select group of kids who went there. And I was nervous. I was actually terrified because I hadn't went to school with whites, and it was perceived that there was something different in their school. There was something different about them. So when I went into the school, you know, of course you get the looks and that kind of thing. But the one thing I did, I took the time and I saw a book on a shelf. I was like, that looks like the same book we have on ours. And I opened it up. Guess what? The information was the same. And I realized I can compete on any level, not just in a poor community. I can compete on any level. And I took that with me. And in regards to being a mentor, what can mentors do? I think one thing that I learned over time about being a mentor, at first, when I started off being a mentor, the young men to careers, take them on field trips, do picnics for them, hot dogs, do fun things for them. And over time, that's great. They need that. Some young kids need to see different things. The only problem was we kept coming back to the same issue of academic performance. They couldn't go to IBM or to MIT and you're not performing well. We can show them all the high technology and talk about the judges and lawyers and all the things you can be, but it doesn't mean anything if you don't prepare yourself academically. So what I tried to do then was to make the best of both worlds. I want to expose you to a few things, but I definitely want to make sure you understand the priority is academics. That is your priority. That is your job for now. That is how you're going to be judged. When you go and apply for a job, they're not going to say, what other jobs have you had? They're going to look at your GPA. And your GPA, your grade point average, is an indicator of your work effort.
Yeah, no, I think that's important.
Job. So as a mentor, I want to make sure that not only am I telling the young man academics is important, but I can sit down and help the young man with his academics. And I spend a lot of time not only mentoring, but I tutor the young kids I'm with. Because I take it personal. I'm in the community where there's a mixture of whites and blacks, and which is good. However, when I go to the Honor Society induction, where my daughter was inducted, there was out of 80 students, and I counted, there was only 6 African American students, and they represent roughly 20% of the population. 80, students inducted, only 6, and only 2 African-American males. Those numbers are atrocious. The little group I had in at that particular school, I had 18 young African-American males, and only 1 of the 18 made it to the honor roll. And my push is to constantly set the bar high, and not only set it high, to my ability to help them get there by sitting down with them as a mentor.
You know, I was reading Chiwenza Kanjufu, one of his books. He's one of my favorite authors, and he's been on the program many times. And in one of his books, he talks about, speaking of the education, I don't want to go into too much of a tangent on this, but you just brought something to mind. You talked about the National Honor Society. You talked about classrooms and the makeup of class. Well, you didn't get into the makeup of classrooms, but that's where I want to go with this. He says that, you know, one of the issues are we don't have very many African-American teachers. And I was reading a book, I guess it's about 4 years old, so it's dated, but I would bank that the statistics haven't changed significantly. That at that time, only 6% of American teachers were African-American. Now, this is, you know, broad in general because we're talking about across America. We aren't talking about in Chicago or in East Orange or in Dallas or Houston where you have a significant African-American population. So it's an average, granted. But still and yet, he says only 1% of those teachers are African-American males. So I'm just stepping back, and I'm talking with two educators here, you know, Dr. Kafani, who I'm sure you heard a little bit of his bio, but he's the director of the Africana Institute at Essex County College in Newark, and yourself being an educator for many years. That's a rarity. Your thoughts on that having an impact to having to learn and how a mentorship can help with a black student, and we're talking about males, but male and female, being able to excel given that environment.
Well, I'll try to chime in here because as a former educator, I want to share something. I selected a school that was predominantly African-American and Hispanic. I could have went to other schools, but I wanted to continue my impact on my community. And as a role model, I felt there was a need to be there. And when I got on my campus, there was a need to be there. And the lack of African-American males was evident. The concern that I had was that the kids were so far behind in their academics. The kids were so far behind in recognizing an African-American male as a role model. The kids were so far behind in their readiness to engage. However, over time, what we have to do is over time. It's not a quick fix. Over time, by the end of the year, the young men kind of understood where I was coming from. And you have to be a little stern because they will try you. Our young men will try you. And I think the whole thing about our community is sometimes our young men get so frustrated that they lash out on the very people that want to help them. And because that's what they're used to. They're used to people not showing up. They're used to people making broken promises. So it's very important for us, if we're going to be there, let's be committed to these young men. These young men, they need us. They need our presence. And I recognize that over time that they start to buy into what I was selling. I was selling not only being the best on the hardwood, but being best in the classroom. And they started to buy into it over time. The problem is that they have other teachers who don't buy in to what I would doing for the young men. Granted, teaching police, firefighters, those are what I call servants, and I truly respect them. However, there are a few bad apples everywhere, and there were some teachers who not only allowed the kids to fail, but they didn't put any interest or try to connect with the kids. Sometimes you have a child who is struggling, afraid to ask you a question, or when they do, you snap at them. You don't give them the love that you would give your own child who's in need. What I try to remind teachers are that you are the key to their future. If they're coming into your classroom, that's your responsibility for that time period that you are with them. You have a responsibility to educate and make sure that they leave your classroom educated. Make sure that they leave your classroom a master of the subject you're teaching. One of my students I was tutoring, he took a pre-test, and he missed, there was 56 questions on there, and he missed 41. And I asked him, so what did your teacher say? He didn't say nothing. And I took his test, and I looked at, it's a math test, and it had multiple choice, but he didn't do, the work he did was probably on about 10 questions, and he probably got most of them right. The ones he missed, he didn't show any work. And the teacher didn't say anything to him. And I challenged him to show work. I'm an engineer, and I've taken all the math you can ever want to take, and I have to show work to do those problems. What my point is, the teacher didn't engage the kid and care enough to say, why aren't you doing better, and why aren't you showing your work? That would remind me that I need to do a better job. If one of my students continued to fail, there's something need to be able, whether you're black or white, you have to connect with these kids when they come through your classroom. It's so
I want to push the envelope a little bit. So if we, and I agree with what you're saying and understand the point you're making that I think is important, I want to kind of push this to looking at, and this is something I've been kind of toying with, in that, well, I won't say toying with, this is what I've been working to address is a better way to say it, and that is that some of the things you're talking about are some of the things that I do, but that those things oftentimes enable us to assist small numbers of students, but we have big community-wide, nationwide, statewide problems. So how do we, what are some strategies that are less personal maybe, but that can address the problems on a bigger scale? How can we begin to address more boys? If you take the state of New Jersey, or you take the state of New York, or you know, the city of Los Angeles, the city of New York, has 8 million people. You assume right. Is over 100,000 young, 200, 300, 400,000 young boys. How do we begin to roll things up to begin to address the model in that way?
Well, there's two sides to that problem. One is you can do it from a community perspective where you lack some of the resources, or you hold your, not the mayor, but the school district.
Superintendent.
You can look at it from that standpoint because he's the leader of the teachers. Now, again, part of our problem when we have our kids mixed with a middle-class teacher and you come from a lower class is being familiar with the issues that go on.
Mm-hmm.
In order to make a widespread change and to make a larger impact, because the facts are there, we don't have to study this statistics. It is known that we are low in every category out there, math, science, history, English, social studies. On all tests, we are at the lowest point. What we have to do is we have to use the resources that we already have. And those resources are teachers and various associations. There are various Greek letter fraternities and sororities that are doing work in the community. There are various associations, NAACP, the Freemasons, the Shriners, the Conspiracy. There's various organizations that have not been tapped to come into the school and volunteer. I volunteer at the school, and I'm one man, and I take 18 kids. And I go once a week, I go three times a week because I break them up into groups of six. What would happen if there was 10 other guys that went to that school? Not 100 other guys. If there was 10 other guys, we can tackle 180 students, right?
Right.
So in every community that has a school, and usually the school population is, let's just say elementary school population is 800. Now, all 800 in most cases are not struggling. Probably about 100 maybe, 150 are struggling academically. If we can get a group to come in on an ongoing basis and commit to working with these students, then I think we can solve some of the problems. The other part of it is you got to hold that school superintendent accountable. We want to march and we want to get attention when there's a crime that has been committed against our people. Our academic apathy, our academic performance is a crime because it's been going on for so long and nobody has come in to change it. Our kids are bright. Our kids are brilliant. And it doesn't matter where you come from. I came from a single-parent home. I came from a community that had drugs, that had crime, that had all the negative things. And because I had a teacher and a coach and a mom and different, it's not just one person come in and be engaged in our kids. We have to realize on our jobs that the way you move up sometimes is being familiar with somebody. So if they don't see you or not familiar with you or familiar with you in a standpoint that they trust you, they may not promote you, they may not hire you. Until we can get our kids developed and moving into those areas that they're not often hired, we're going to all suffer. Those who make it out are going to suffer, what I consider myself. Most of the jobs I've had, I've been the only African-American engineer there. At the job I'm at now, there's over 1,000 employees, and I'm the only African-American male professional. Now, they have some janitors. They have some people on the forklift, but the only professional man. So we can do more, and we have to do more if we're going to raise the bar in our careers and for our future. But you got to hold that superintendent accountable, and we have community organization active, engaged.
Yeah. Wow, that's a good
phrase. Say that phrase again. You said that it's a crime. What did you say? You said something about our schools. I want to reemphasize that point.
It's a crime that we continue to have low performance in every category, and no one has stepped in to correct that. And it can be.
In other words, no one's accountable.
Nobody's accountable. They look at it and they say, "Oh, it's just them again. They're scoring low." Well, guess what I do on the for our state test for my 18 boys, young men. I have private weekly, like 4 weeks out, I'll have private hour-and-a-half sessions to go over what I think they need to know for these tests. And most of them do exceptionally well. You have to – what I call this, what I do is called stacking a deck. I'm trying to do whatever I can to make sure that I raise the academic performance of these young men. And I'm not, I don't, I'm not going to tell, I'm not going to cheat or steal or nothing like that to do it, but I'm going to put some work in to try to teach them what I know they have not mastered and I know will be asked on a test.
Right, right.
And we just need more people get involved.
I'm going to agree with you that I think there needs to be more accountability. I have an issue, and I've said this. I go on record for 4 years, 5 years, making this statement. That if you're a superintendent, you know, when things are going well, whether you deserve it or not, you get the accolades, and when they don't, whether you deserve it or not, you need to be taking a significant amount of that responsibility. And that's just where I am with it. You know, having been in corporate for 25 years, I've seen how that works. If you don't perform, you're gone.
Yep.
And you keep rotating until you find one that does. And sometimes it's the luck of the dice. But the bottom line is, and this is the way I was taught, and it's worked for me, the bottom line is, are you effective? Sometimes the chips just don't line up and you've done what you could and you're not effective and you just have to move on. Maybe it's just not good synergy or energies that you're in the mix with those around you. But you, as a superintendent, as a leader, you got to be willing to let some teachers go. And if you've got a scenario, and I'm not giving the parents a pass on this, but you need a creative team that will say, okay, we've got some parents here in our dysfunctional situation that are not engaged. What can we do to engage it? If you're a superintendent and you don't have a team that can come up with those answers, then maybe you should move on and we should just keep rotating until we find one that does. So I concur with that. And we have a number of underperforming districts in this country. I mean, the statistics are darn near startling in terms of the dropout rate. The dropout rate in some districts, especially in our major metropolitan areas, are higher than the graduation rates.
Yeah. Well, we had to take a step back, though, because here I have to pull in the whole piece, sociological piece on this, and that is that we also have some systemic both racism and other kinds of problems. So if you take the state of New Jersey and you look at the school districts that have been overtaken by the state, so then now you have these state-imposed, Newark, for instance, you have a state-imposed superintendent who is oppositional to many of the people within the municipality and even the elected officials, but they have no authority over what happens in the school because her edicts are coming directly from her relationship with the Commissioner of Education and the governor of the state of New Jersey. And so then you that kind of systemic piece undermines any other efforts that may be there, and we have to figure out how to counter those types of measures as well.
You're right. Where you have those scenarios, and I would say to some degree, and it gets a bit involved where you have to really drill down into it to see some of the caveats of that whole scenario. You've got a state in edit, like you said, that says, okay, we're stepping in. In how many of those instances do things not get better? And if not, then I think we have to look back as a society. And I say society now because when you have that kind of a mandate, you know, where's the counterbalance? If that doesn't help get any better, if that doesn't help things to get any better, then you have to step back and say, okay, now we really have a problem because the state has stepped in. And usually if you are looking under most state situations in America, they're being run by those who are not looking like the people who they have jurisdiction over, i.e.,
right.
they're mainly, you know, white, Anglo-Saxon, that are coming in and running these districts, and if they're still performing poorly, you know, the question is, as I'm hearing you say, Dr. Ghofrani, you know, what's the out? Now what? You know, is that out of the frying pan into the fire? You know, what recourse do we have now? When it was district run, at least the people could say, okay, you're not working, we want something better. But when the government comes in, then what? Because let's look at this situation. We a lot of this comes back to the societal issue in our communities, and we're talking African American communities, to be frank. What contributes to that is low unemployment, higher crime, higher drug use. All of that comes back to lower unemployment. So that becomes systemic to the way our society is set up. And I can't blame it all on government, because a lot of our society is based on private enterprise. But right. then and yet, go ahead, Dr.
It's based on private enterprise, but it also is the historical trajectory of the process of enslavement, right? A lot of people will say, oh, why you got to go back to slavery? That has nothing to do with it. But it does. If you look at it, there's a lot of new research coming out, and I think it's powerful stuff. It shows the relationship of the banks, of the mortgage companies, of the municipalities, of the states, and that they all have these, and individual families, and they all have these years upon years of built up both wealth and resources that have this foundation based on the oppression of Africans. And so that us as people of African descent, that we now have to address that. You know, I think that, you know, at some point we got to make another push about reparations, and reparations has to come back into this to the play on this. But you know, I think that we also have the ability. You know, many of us are exceptions to the rule. Right? I grew up in South Central Los Angeles, low income, two parent family. You know, big family. But nonetheless, one of few in my family who have advanced education. And so then the point is, I could look at it and say, oh, I'm the only one. But that's not enough for me. It's that we have to begin now saying that these systemic things that stem from the enslavement of African people, what are the things that we bring in now as resources? What are the systems in our own community that we have to transform that are going to usurp the enslaved mentality? So we have our own issues that we have to deal with, in addition to the systems of white supremacy and the racial social structure that's established. And so we have to look at all those things simultaneously. I think the main thing we have to do is we have to take a holistic approach. We can't just say one thing. And I think that becomes our problem sometimes, is that we look at it as one thing, but it's not just one thing. And some of the social problems or challenges in our community are very real. You know, if a child is growing up, we have a lot of homeless kids on campus who are homeless, and then they go to but they come to class and they graduate. So how do we address that? You know, we have to have our own stuff in place where we're willing to help fund some of those kids. We're willing to, I don't care if it's $5 or $10, that for a kid who's going to school who's homeless, that's a great contribution.
You know, Dr. Ghofrani, the key I heard there is it's not just one thing. I think that we do need to hold ourselves accountable as the head, and I want to come back to that superintendent piece. You know, as the head, I would expect some creativity. Not to say that, you know, oh, it's all his fault or all her fault as the superintendent directly, but I would say we need to have the creativity to to be able to engage in the conversation that you just mentioned. I would want to hear that from my superintendent. I would want to hear the emphasis on we've got to address the systemic unemployment situation. Because in many districts, the school district system has a significantly higher budget than the city in which it resides in. Significantly, meaning it has a significant amount of influence to be able to step out and independently speak on these things. And so that's where I say I have a concern with whether that these individuals are operating, because I don't believe you can in the African-American community, are operating just within that box. I believe you have to operate, you have to think and operate outside of that box of the educational system. And I think in many of these districts, the wherewithal is there. And I agree with you that it does come down to finance and it does go all the way back to slavery, because there has always been a link between government and business. And believe you me, that link still does exist.
Without a doubt.
Evan, what do you say?
I agree. I think being creative is the direction we need to go. We need to equip ourselves as adults and prepare ourselves to run for school board. We need to equip ourselves as adults to be teachers, to be mentors, to help with this issue. Also, we need to hold our mayors accountable. We talked about jobs, right? Who brings jobs in? The mayor. So there's a lot of – the power above has a lot of control, but the soldiers on the battlefield have to do their work also. We can have to hold that mayor accountable, that superintendent accountable, the principal of that school accountable, those individual teachers accountable. We also got to hold those parents accountable as well, because what teachers will tell you is, well, the student is not reading up to grade level because they don't read at home. Well, I was creative, and I had to do this because I cared about my kids. I didn't always follow the – they have a curriculum that they want you to follow. They want you day by day doing a certain thing. And sometimes in our community, changing one day to the next day a different topic, what have you, our kids don't master it because they don't take homework home as often as they do. We don't give our kids books. Go out to a school and see the next time you see a kid walking around with a book. Mm-hmm. Most of these things are worksheets, or now they got the internet, websites where homework assignments are there, where the instructions are given on the website. What I'm saying is we have to be creative as teachers and realize that if your student population is at risk, then you need to adjust your teaching. You need to make sure your kids master the skills that you want them to have. The biggest thing that a fifth grader has to do is learn to convert a fraction into a decimal. Find you a fifth grader and see if they know what two-thirds is, or three-fifths. Try something like three-fifths. What decimal equivalent is that? You have to realize that's important.
You're correct.
We need to do a better job, but we also, there's mayors, there's superintendents and principals. We need to hold those people who are in charge of that purse string accountable. And the only way we can do that is by voting, being active, and not hold them accountable, but being soldiers. The reason why I work so hard is that you can't blame me, because I'm at the school, and I'm going to hold you accountable because you know I'm at the school. And I always believe that's the best way to lead is by being in front. So you have to be there. We can't complain about our kids not succeeding if we don't have a mentor program in the school, if we're not heading a mentor program, if our parent teacher association is weak. We have to
engage,
and we have to be on the battlefield.
I come back to that issue also, though, of I have to keep coming back now that Dr. Kilfani brought that up, of the systemic racism that we're faced with. And so I think that that has to be more addressed in the system. I'm going to segue in our last 5 minutes to what's been happening, because I'd be remiss, Dr. Poor. I called you a doctor. That must mean you got to get on that.
I'm going to get on it.
And take that. But you are a doctor in a true practical sense. And what I'm saying is, and I'll just call you Dr. Kevin, affectionately, give us your take on what's happening with these children and how that ties in being killed in the streets by law enforcement. Is it like open season? You know, I was talking with Dick Gregory a couple days ago, and, you know, I'm blessed to be able to talk with him from time to time. And he was coming back from Europe, and he said, you know, I said, what's going on? And he said, Daryl, it's as obvious as it seems. I said, it's just like they're coming out the closet. It's just like open season. He says, yeah, it's going to continue until something changes. It's going to continue, and it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
So what is your thought about that, Dr. Porter, in terms of the whole scheme of things and mentoring our children and the children that are being shot down? You know, you've seen it in the news. It's not a coincidence that it's hitting every area of the country. I can almost project like a serial killer where the next one's big one's going to come from. We've got New York, we've got Cleveland, my hometown, we've got St. Louis, we did Florida, we did South Carolina. Are we heading towards Atlanta, Texas, your home state? Well, we had the little situation down there, a little different with the Gen 6. But,
right.
You know, are we heading in that direction? California coming back on the map? What's your thought on this? And Dr. Kilfani, you know, when you come back next week, you know we're going to dig deep into that one. But I want Dr. Porter to give us some thoughts on that in our last 5 minutes.
Well, I hate to say that I see it as open season, but I truly believe that our climate in this society has devalued the African-American male. And what I do see, and I have seen for years, is that when you go into a community and you fear those people in that community because you don't understand their way of living, you don't understand how they react to you, you create animosity between you because you want to pull power. And over time, a people rebel. And when you start dealing with our young men, they may not respond to you as an authority in what you want. So oftentimes, they pull power. And for the police officers, their power is their gun. And I think it's a travesty. The only way we're going to change this is by two things. One, we have to really, really address this lack of tolerance. We have to realize that the people in our community who truly should serve our community need to live in our community. That includes police officers and teachers. You need to live in our community in order to understand what hurts our kids, to understand how they react to different situations. You need to live in our community. Truly believe is that as a community, we need to hold anybody, and we can say it's racism, and some people, they want to throw, they'd like to throw out racism, and I truly believe that some is racially motivated, but I want to say they're bad cops. I want to say they're bad. I don't need to prove that they were racist, because you have to prove that they're racist. You have to prove that they said something, they emailed something, they text something, they were part of an association. No, if you kill an unarmed kid, you should go to jail. This shouldn't take 2 weeks for a prosecutor to come down with some type of charge. If you're a police officer and you kill if you're a trained professional person with a deadly weapon and you have to use it, on an unarmed child, you go to jail.
Well, what do you say about that, Dr. Cofani, in our last couple minutes? Is Dr. Cofani?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hello?
Hello?
Is Dr. Cofani still with us?
Yes, uh-huh. Can you hear me?
Yeah, okay, yeah, we can hear you now. What's your thought on that in our last minute?
Yeah,
or so?
I think that you know, we have to look at it, and I was going to say this is some of one of the things we're going to be addressing on Tuesday of next week, and that is that when you look at the incidences that have been happening, we see them as new, but the actuality is that they're not new, right? That this has been going on for quite some time, and that you have, I think, a couple of things going on here. One is that you do have a racial component, but you also have a component that's about abuse of power. And I think that those two things, when they get married together, that you end up with the fatality that we've seen. And when you look at the issue of, that you have these young folks who are getting killed, I think that when you look at training, I think that that's where you end up seeing one of the problems, because one of the main problems is that the targets, when they go to shoot, even when they feel as though they have to use deadly force, is heart targets. That is, they shoot at the heart of somebody's chest or at their head. And I think that's the number one problem, because if you are expert marksman and you go and have target practice to use, that you got to get recertified with your weapon, then even if you felt life threatened, you should be able to shoot at someone in their leg or in their arm without killing a person, and you would be able to be both protected and you would not take somebody's life. I think that the value of the lives of people is what's in question here.
You know, that's the first thing that Mr. Porter said, is it seems like our children's lives have become devalued. And I believe that ties right back to what we've been talking about today, which is it's important for our men, you know, our adult men, to step up. This is a different movement. Gil Scott-Heron said the revolution will not be televised. It will be live. And it will also be different in that movements, there have been young folks. So glad in this recent movement, especially with Baltimore, starting to see a young. I believe this time around, which is for what Dr. about, is that it's going to be a combination. It's going to be so cool that the senior, and I don't mean senior as in above, at the old heads, us, that we join with this young energy to make this change. I want to thank, as we have about another minute, first Dr. Akhil Cofani. Talk after the program and see if we're going to work it out for next week or the week after. Forward to the interview, and maybe a reporter can call in on that program and vice versa. And of course, I want to thank Mr. Kevin Porter. Porter, you know, we've ended this a little bit sooner than I wanted to, and as you know, I don't do that. This is my program.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to having you come back in the next weeks or so. You don't tune in to one of our programs in the next week.
All
so
right.
I like to offer. Go ahead, Mr. Porter.
I said that'll be great. I really appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your listeners and your co-hosts. I'm passionate about making a change. We only are on this earth for a small window, and we were given something to do. And most of us feel what we're supposed to do, we just need to do it. And I'm at the point where it's time to do it. We need to make sure that our community is safe and our kids are being trained and developed to do the things that they need to do in their lifetime.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to thank you both and wish you to keep moving in the direction that you're moving, Mr. Porter, and kick that next book out so we can continue on the journey, because I think we also have to tell our story.
Because
if someone else is telling the story, then what the story is told is not the one that we want to be heard.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And thank you very much, Mr. Darrell.
All right, and I'd like to thank the listeners. We're in this for the long haul, whatever that is. And I just love to be able to just, collaborate with brothers like you two and our listeners who I didn't get a chance to take calls because the what we had was just so jam-packed. But you can believe the best is yet to come. We will continue fighting the battle. And tell someone about Progressive News Weekly, listeners. You've been listening tonight to Mr. Porter. And you've also been listening to Dr. Akhil Kafani. You can go to the archives as soon as tonight to hear this program in its entirety. Share it with someone. Continue to send in your suggestions. And we'll be back at the same time, same place next week. And hopefully you'll be here as well. God bless. Have a great weekend. And make a difference in someone's life.
All right.
As long as we believe, the best is yet to come.